Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Travis from, I think it's the, as you say, James Gray Group in Pottstown.
Hi everyone, my name's Travis, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Travis.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm really grateful to be here. Thanks everyone for being here. Really grateful that they asked me to come. I have a lot of respect for Tom and Chelsea. So I was really glad when they asked me to come out. And it's just funny, when somebody asks me to speak, I break it down like, first of all, somebody's asking me to do something. That's crazy, you know? Because usually it was like they're asking me to like leave them alone or like, you know, so, or like not to show up or like really don't ask me anything because I don't have anything to offer, you know? And then to ask me to speak, that's mind blowing, you know? Usually people ask me to not speak before, you know, or don't show up or, you know, so. You know, and I owe my life to AA and all you guys. So anytime anyone asks me anything, I don't question it. I say yes, and then I move my schedule around because this is the most important thing. This is what keeps me going. This is what's gotten me well. It's what, has helped relieve my obsession to drink alcoholically, you know, to death pretty much. So yeah, I'm really glad to be here. Yeah, I owe my life to AA and all you guys. So, you know, when I say that I'm an alcoholic, it's just funny, like, you know, I do a lot of reading and a lot of work with other people, and in the doctor's opinion, you know, you guys asked me to come out and speak, so in the doctor's opinion, it says that we need a message of depth and weight, you know, so I hope that I'm able to deliver that tonight, because I know that it was really important for me to hear other people speaking early on, and you know, it's important for me right now, and you know, even people with like 25, 30 years, it's important to hear people like me just because it'll like reassure that, you know, that they've done the right thing and, you know, new people, I hope they get something out of my message. Yeah, and it also says in the doctor's opinion, you know, I said I'm an alcoholic, the alcoholics are people simply that like the effect produced by alcohol. And I can definitely relate to that. And, being an alcoholic means that when I put alcohol inside my body, I suffer from the phenomenon of craving, meaning that I want to keep doing it regardless, you know? And alcoholic also means, I like to think of it like the trifecta, you know? It's like the phenomenon of craving, the obsession, you know? So when I'm not drinking, I obsess about doing it, you know, in the spiritual malady, which makes me think that I'm not good enough or, you know, which, you know, it's that hole in the soul, you know, all those things that we talk about, you know, filling that void, you know, that's the spiritual malady, which makes me feel like, that I want to escape, you know, that, you know, I want to drink because, you know, I struggle with doing life on life's terms, you know, so that's what I like to think. I have that perfect mixture that makes me, a true alcoholic that needs this, you know, I know lots of people that have, you know, I've had drinking problems, and the book talks about all this stuff, but, you know, so I am an alcoholic, you know, for a long time, I was ashamed to come to meetings, and, ashamed of the disease that I have, but, I'm not ashamed anymore, you know, I used to, like, be worried if people would see me out front of a meeting or something, but, and I had no problems people seeing me out front of a bar, or, like, you know, messed up on the street, you know, because I was messed up, you know, I didn't care, but, you know, I'm not ashamed of the person I am. I'm not ashamed to be an AA. I'm really grateful to be a part of the solution. I'm really grateful that I stayed and kept coming back. And that, you know, the God of my understanding, saw fit to spare me an alcoholic death, you know, cause, I know a lot of people that aren't as fortunate, you know, and I know a lot of people that are still struggling. So, and I take this very seriously. Because I don't ever want to be stuck in that misery ever again. And I don't want to see anybody else in that misery. So, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much my opening. You know, I really like that we have an hour here because it allows me to talk about some things that I normally wouldn't get to talk about in like a 30-minute, you know, crunch session. So, I'm really going to try to keep it on my disease and the solution, but, I'll throw a couple little fun facts in there. If you can relate to it, awesome. You know, if you can't, you know, take what you need, leave the rest, you know, so, yeah, qualify myself. My sober date is October 1st of 2020. I have a sponsor, and he's not ashamed to say that he's my sponsor. I have a home group or two, and I have a service commitment. I also chair a, the general chair of a speaker meeting on Sunday nights at Cherry Street. So I can relate to Tom and, you know, what he does here. It has helped me tremendously, keeps me on my toes, keeps me meeting other people, getting numbers and, you know, seeing people that really have something to offer the group. And, I am making amends and living in 10, 11, and 12. And I also take guys through the steps, which I'm really grateful to be able to do that. Yes, I think that pretty much qualifies me. I'm 31 years old. I was born and raised in Reading, Pennsylvania, good old Reading, Pennsylvania. And, yeah, man, it's crazy. I was born with this thing, man. Like, nowhere in the big book does it say that I'm a victim of my trauma, you know, and I drink alcoholically because I'm a victim and so many bad things have happened to me. And no, and this is just my perspective. And, you know, you don't have to agree with me. I was born with this thing, man. I just remember ever since I was a kid, just anything that makes me feel good, I'm going to do in excess. And like, why not? You know, it feels good. Why would I not do it more? You know? So, that's just been ever since I can remember, you know, little things, little habits, like sucking my thumb, eating food, video games. I mean, across the board, all those things. You know, I've heard so many things in the rooms that have stuck out to me, like, you know, being an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. Dude, that one hit nail in the coffin. You know, like, I'm like always the happiest person. Like growing up, I was a happy kid, you know. But then there were those times where it was, you know, dealing with life. I was just like, life sucks. You know, I'm happy, right? And I like life, but there's a lot of negative things that I don't agree with. And why, especially when you're a kid, why face it? You know, there's nothing I can do about it. I'm a kid, you know, it's escape, you know? So I'm going to eat a lot of food and I'm going to play a lot of video games and I'm going to do a lot of, make people laugh, you know, all those things, which helped me escape for a brief moment. So, yeah, like, and that's why, like, I try not to talk about, like, too much, like, the things that I went through because I really just don't think that they have anything to do with my alcoholism. You know what I mean? Like, sure, like, you know, I had, you know, some things, with family, you know, and, but I just really don't think it matters. So if you care to know, you know, my mom, I don't want to say if she's, you know, if she's one of us or not, but she struggled. She had five kids before she was 25. So me and my siblings were all very close and, you know, we were taken away from her at a young age. And, you know, I just remember that being like kind of a big deal, you know, but I'm a kid, like, I don't really know, you know? So I went to go live with my grandparents at a young age. They took me and my older brother in, and, just happiness, dude. Like, you know, my grandparents are awesome people, just happiness, bliss, you know? And, I didn't know my dad. And then I met my dad, like 8 or something like that. And then, so we were with my grandparents like 2 years, and then we went to go live with him. And, yeah, man, I don't know. It's just crazy because, like, I just remember, like, being a happy kid, and when I started drinking alcoholically, I just felt like I had lost that kid that I was, you know? Just that happy-go-lucky, like, interest in things, and then, like, when I started drinking, it was just drinking, you know? And I kind of, you know, I lost myself in that. So when I reflect on, like, what my childhood was like, it's important, because that's, like, genuinely who I am, you know? And I feel like I'm starting to get to know that guy again, which is cool. So, yeah, man, just like normal kid stuff, you know? You know, I feel like I'm a person full of love. Like, I love my siblings. I love sports. I love life. But definitely, like, signs of alcoholic behavior, you know? Just class clown. It's funny. I heard Tom spoke recently. He spoke for me, and so many things stuck out to me, like the control, like the basic lack of control. That fits me perfectly. And still today, like, I will start to say things and I'm just like caught up in the energy. And afterwards, I'm like, where did that come from? Why did I not have, because I lack basic control. And the same thing happens when I pick up a drink. I start drinking. I'm like, oh yeah, fun, fun, fun. And next thing you know, I'm 10 beers deep, you know? And, I lack basic control and, of my actions, my thoughts, what I say, what I do sometimes. And, yeah, I really think that plays a huge part in the alcoholism. Like why I would want to make people laugh in the moment in school just for like a little laugh. It's just like basic lack of control, you know? So yeah, all those things were there, man. I was like a video game junkie and, you know, all that stuff. I was really curious about alcohol and, other things that went with that at a young age. So I just remember being like, you know, so my mom would like let me sip a wine cooler. You know what I mean? I thought it was so cool. I thought that's what, you know, adults did. So I'd steal a wine cooler. My uncles are really cool people. They're like, oh, we'll give them a beer and watch them dance around, you know? And, so that like, I thought, you know, it was cool. And I just remember my stepmom was like a really miserable person. And when she had a wine cooler, she was nicer. And I was like, ooh, I was like, that's good. You know, so I, you know, I made that connection. You know, I grew up and people were drinking, people were smoking pot, people were doing this thing. So you think it's cool, you know? So, you know, I was like, I don't know, like about ninth grade, you know, like, you know, drinking beer, stuff like that, you know? And, I just remember cause I'm like playing football, I'm getting straight A's. I really feel like I'm coming into my own, starting to become a teenager and stuff like that. And I just remember like putting down the video games, starting to like focus on like sports and girls and then, you know, alcohol and partying. Like, I like to say like a lot, it's funny. A lot of my story is going to be early on. It starts as partying. I like to call it partying because for me, it's like alcohol, women, whatever you want to call it. I'm not going to talk about all those things, but for me, it was partying. I like to think of partying as like, oh yeah, I'm drinking a lot and I'm with people, right? But towards the end of my story, it wasn't partying. It was me alone, you know, with my alcoholism. So I like to say I was, you know, I just really became enamored with partying at a young age. And I went from playing football, doing all these, you know, getting good grades and everything like that to, it was like I didn't even recognize the person I was very, very quickly. Everything I did revolved around drinking. And I had people pointing it out to me. They're like, dude, like, where you been? Like, what are you doing? Like, you know, people tell me that I've lost control at a very, very young age. Like, I don't know, like 15, 16. I went from never having a drink, never really smoking pot or anything to just very far into the spectrum. And yeah, I just lost control, man. And that's the alcoholism, you know, unmanageable and powerless. And I enjoyed it. Honestly, as a kid, I wanted to try all the things. I wanted to go to all the parties. I wanted to do it all. And I wasn't ashamed to tell you that. And if you stood in my way, then you were gone. And it was that easy. That's how I dealt with all my problems. So, you know, very quickly, I was no longer playing football towards the end of high school. I was, no longer getting good grades. Yeah, I was just doing whatever I want, whenever I wanted, you know, self will run riot, whatever you want to call it. And that's pretty much how that went, you know. I carried that pattern all the way through. So like my dad's like a miserable guy, and I'll just sum this up. So my brother was 1 year ahead of me. My brother graduated. My dad kicked him out right away, no reason, you know. My dad, that was his cycle, right? His dad kicked him out at a young age, and they never spoke again. So my dad carried that on. It was nothing we did, So my brother was 1 year ahead of me. Boom, he got kicked out. I'm like, oh, this is weird, and I'm here by myself. And I was like, well, I know it's coming in a year. So a year later, I graduate high school. I go to grab my key off the ring, and my dad's like, you got 3 days. Like, it was like, whoa, you're weird, freaking weird, dude. Like, you got 3 days, get out of here. I'm like, all right, yeah, that's not weird. All right, dude, take care. And so, you know, and it was hard, you know, to be completely honest. My mom's not, wasn't really there a whole lot. And, you know, so I was on my own, right out of high school. I guess I wanted to be, you know, I definitely like doing my own thing. So, you know, after that, dude, my drinking took a violent turn. It was really bad before that, but it took a violent turn. And, to sum it up for you, within, I don't know, a year, I was getting arrested. You know, I was involved in a bunch of things I shouldn't have been doing at a really young age. And, it was bad, man. It was real bad. I don't want to talk about too much of that stuff, but, I wound up, you know, getting in trouble for the first time big, and that scared me, and so I stopped. It was like for 4 or 5 years I was going really, really hard, and then when I dropped the dime, I stopped. I realized what I was doing was wrong, and but it's not enough to keep me going the right path. So I wound up with 5 years of parole, I tried like starting to like get my life together. I was like, okay, that was wrong. I should probably stop being a bum, you know? And, so, you know, I just went in this cycle of trying to get a job. I'd get a job and I'd get a car, and I would get some money up and then I would get a place and then I would party it all away. And then so on and so forth. You guys all know the song and dance. So that went up being the cycle for just about 5 years, man. I couldn't get out of my own way. And I just want to point out that I didn't grow up with God in my life or any higher power at all. Never been to church really. I didn't know the Serenity Prayer, didn't know the Lord's Prayer. I had nothing spiritual going on in my life. Didn't know about Buddha, didn't know about nothing. And that was just how I was raised. Didn't know about AA, never heard of you guys. Didn't know about NA, didn't even know people didn't do drugs or alcohol. I knew about rehab, but I thought that's where like rich people went. I thought that's, you know, I'm dead serious. I had a rich friend and he went to rehab one time, came back and he was like, yeah, that sucked, but my parents paid for it. And now I'm back to, you know, getting messed up. I'm like, oh, that's weird. You know, maybe you should stop getting messed up. But I mean, whatever. So, yeah, it was weird. Like the whole time I was on parole, you know, they never maybe get evaluated. I just slipped through the cracks. In high school, I slipped through the cracks. Of course my behavior was noticeable. Everybody knew and nobody did anything about it. I never once got drug tested. I never once got forced to do anything. And you know, maybe, I'm too smart for my own good. You know, I would always slip through the cracks, you know? So, but yeah, I just got caught in this cycle, of trying to get my life together. You know, I would get a job, I'd hold it for a little while, but I could never get more than, cause I knew that my drinking and my partying, was out of control. I knew that when I did it, I couldn't stop and it was out of control and it messed with me getting a job. And it's hard starting out. You know, it's hard starting out and getting a job and saving up money and getting a car and doing that over and over again. It's exhausting. And, but I could never get more than like, I can never get more than like 6 months. You know, it'd always be like 2 months and I'd go out, get wasted, crash the car, do something, you know. So that was the theme. Nothing really major happened in that 5 years. You know, I managed to like, you know, stay alive. You know, I managed to like, you know, keep a car most of the time and, keep a girlfriend. I don't know why she ever stayed. You know, just like random stuff like that. It was, probably more manageable than like the average alcoholic, but the disease definitely is a progressive thing. It definitely progressed. And, so I started to get off of, I was coming up to like a couple months getting off parole. And I just remember I just started going hard, like really hard. I was like, yeah, I need a pregame getting off parole. I was doing really well. Again, I didn't know about AA. I didn't know anything. I was just working my job, trying to learn trade. And, so I was partying with a friend of mine. And, he just stopped me. And this is crazy because out of all the partying I did, out of all the messes I made in my life, not one time did anyone ever tell me, hey, I think you have a problem. No one. No one had the balls. No one cared enough. I don't know what you want to call it. No one said anything. And no one had a solution either. And you know, my family's watching me suffer, you know, all this stuff. So this guy, he's a really good friend of mine. He's my best friend still today. And I thank him. You know, this helped save my life, really. He told me, he's like, man, I think you have a problem. And I was like, what are you talking about, dude? Like, we're drinking. I'm like, you're doing what I'm doing. He's like, well, no, but, you know, I think you have a problem. And he's like, I'm going to take you somewhere. And I was like, okay, cool. And like, thank God I was open-minded enough to listen to him because I knew, you know, but no one had ever said anything. You know what I mean? It was weird. So, yeah, I walked into my first AA meeting at the end of 2015 and, it was great. It was a lot to take in. You know, I went there because I had a partying problem. The whole spirituality thing was a complete blindside to me, but, yeah, man, it really paved the way for me being open-minded enough to, continue to get help and like, thank God for you guys. You know what I mean? You welcomed me. You made me feel comfortable and I kept coming back. And then I wound up in my first treatment, in 2016. Cause of course, like you know, it's a lot to take when you first come in, you know, it's a lot to take in. But yeah, you guys paved the way for me going to treatment for the first time. I got to go to the Karen Foundation, which is amazing. I got a scholarship. Like, what a blessing. I'm sitting there in the room and I've got like no insurance. And she's like, yeah, I don't know. You're going to go to this crappy place. And all of a sudden the phone rings and like, you want to go to the Karen Foundation? And I was like, that sounds expensive. Yeah, I'll go. You know, so, it was great. It was, right outside of Reading. Thank God for all those people. Thank God for all the people that are like counselors and, rehabs and all this stuff. And I got like a really good education on what was going on, and it like taught me a lot, and I confirmed a lot of things of what was going on with me. And yeah, I'm just so grateful for that experience. And I hit the ground running, to be completely honest. I got out of there, I got a sponsor, and I really started to see the benefits of this thing. You know, and I just want to highlight a few things, because I'm just going to get to the solution here soon, because I really like AA, and I really like the life that I have today. But what happened to me, like, was things started to not make sense. You know what I mean? Like, I'm doing all this partying, right, which I did like to do for some reason, you know, and it just wasn't making sense to me. Like, I wasn't going anywhere in life. I was miserable, you know, so that wasn't making sense. And then, like, I'm looking around me, and I'm like, all right, well, like, this is kind of crappy, you know. And then I'm like, also, like, you're not taking care of your kids, you know, like, you're on the run. I'm like, you know, he just died. Like, this isn't making sense. You know what I mean? It's just, none of it was making sense to me. So, you know, I had that realization, you know, and I really think that helped with being open-minded with everything AA had to offer. And so, yeah, I got a sponsor. I started going, you know, I was going to a lot of meetings, started working the steps, and it was working. I remember I built like my dream car really quickly with my friends. I got a good job, you know, all the things that AA promises. It was great. I got an apartment for me and my girlfriend at the time, and it was good. I was cruising through the steps. And I just remember we got this apartment, and you know, I was working real hard and everything like that. And then it's just like a few weeks were going by where I just wasn't hitting as many meetings and stuff like that. And I'm talking to my sponsor, and he's like, when's the last time you were at a meeting? Because, you know, you guys are like Yoda. You already know. He knew something was up. And he was like, when's the last time you were at a meeting? And I'm like, I don't know, maybe a week ago? And he goes, dude, if you don't go to meetings, you're going to relapse and die. And I was like, what? Dude, I got this apartment, like this sick car. Like, dude, I'm a freaking baller. Like, what do you mean, dude? Like, I'm a man. And he's like, I really hope you guys like my sarcasm, by the way. And it's funny because, like, you know, him and I weren't, like, the sponsee, like, super tight. You know, like, we were cool, but, like, he really didn't know me that well, but he knew was my disease, you know? And he was right. Without knowing too much about me personally or how I used or anything, he knew my disease, and he was exactly right. And I resented that statement. And it was New Year's 2017, I picked up. Because things weren't living up to my expectations, and that one moment of weakness, you know, I remember it was sad, dude. I picked up on New Year's and just like lived a lie that night, and you know, very slowly. Now, if you have really good recovery, you know, in my experience, I had good recovery. It was like a slow, you know, it was like, all right, well, I know that was wrong, so I'm going to keep going back to meetings. I'm going to try and, like, pick up where I left off, you know. And so then it was, like, a month later I used again. And then, you know, and then I was like, oh, well, that sucks. So then, like, you know, 2 weeks I picked up again. You know what I mean? And it was just crazy. So everything that God had blessed me with, I lost. And by the end of 2017, I was exactly at the point that my sponsor had told me about, where I was about to die. It was a miserable existence. I had lost everything, was losing the apartment. To sum it up, I was looking at like 5 to 10 years in jail. It was really bad, man. And I just remember sitting in a jail cell, like, just thinking, like, man, like, it's over, you know? And I'm grateful for that time, though, because I really feel like it allowed me to clear my head and sit with myself and accept the things that I had done at that time. And it really allowed me to get close with my higher power. You know, there's a lot of people say, like, oh, you know, you only found God because you're in jail and all that stuff. And, like, and I really don't care what anybody says. But, you know, it really allowed me to make that connection and explore that further. I really valued that time. And I did the best that I could with that time. So I was in jail for, like, you know, I went in and I got bailed out and went back in, that whole song and dance. But I was in there for 6 months, and you know, I got cleaned up, I got put some weight on, you know, I felt really good, and God blessed me with the opportunity. I got out, and I got to fight my case from the street. And yeah, man, like, that jail sober time does not equate to recovery, you know? So I got out and I was like, I got 6 months. Like, I got to hit the ground running, you know? And it was just misery from there on, because I didn't do this, you know? I couldn't dress up the outside and, you know, I needed to do that internal work. So, I'll just sum it up. It was like in and out of treatments. I actually, going into treatment in 2017 I wound up at Teen Challenge. Actually, I met my sponsor there, but he was just there for a year. It's just crazy how things work. We glanced eyes for a second and I ended up going to like a bunch of different treatments between 2018 and 2019. It's just that misery cycle. I'm fighting a case from the street. I'm trying to not die essentially. It was really humbling. The whole process of having a good recovery, and then my sponsor telling me the truth, and then running from that, and being in jail, and that repeated cycle again, over and over again. Except it was really bad, you know, just treatment after treatment. And I just remember I was at what's that place called? I was at Valley Forge Medical Center. I was real jacked up, and I was standing in line for food, and somebody talked about halfway houses. I always thought I was too good for a halfway house or a recovery house, by the way. I'm too good for that. You know, I don't have anywhere to go or eat or sleep, and I'm too good for that. But really, it was fear. You know, I didn't want to give up my freedom. You know, I didn't want to do something new. But somebody said that halfway house was free, so I was all over that, you know. So, and I found out there was one in Pottstown, and I'm from Reading, so I figured that was, like, far enough to keep me safe, but close enough to keep me close to my family. So, I wound up in Pottstown at ACA, and, man, I was... like really where things started to take off, man. And I'm just so grateful for trying new things and for taking suggestions from you guys. And, I got hooked up with this gym where people are staying sober and they have meetings there. You know, 'cause we gotta have fun, you know? So I'm meeting other people that are having fun working out, you know, and I really, I like to say, like, AA is, you guys are my home. This is, and I will always be of service. But really I go anywhere that anybody's doing anything positive, you know? That's church. I mean, anywhere, dude. Anywhere that somebody's doing something positive, I'm there. So, I just started getting plugged in, man. Pottstown's not the prettiest place on earth, but, good recovery and people are staying sober there. And if you can stay sober in Pottstown, you can stay sober anywhere. So, it's just funny. The geographical change thing does not work. I'll just sum it up with this. So, I had like 6 months. I was graduating from ACA. I had saved up every one of my pennies. I graduated ACA. I bought a motorcycle. I bought the cell phone I wanted and I got a place. Boom. You know? And I was like, yeah, I got a good foundation. I got good meetings. I got this place. Everything's so great. I'm so great. Boom. COVID hits. I'm like, what do I do now? You know what I mean? I'm like, great. Like meetings are closed. I'm like, what am I going to do? You know what I mean? Like the world's like collapsing, you know? And of course, my sponsor comes over. He's like, yo, we're going to do this thing. Big baby. You got this Zoom. Boom. You know, I'm going to give it a laptop, Wi-Fi password, all this stuff. And, I was like, yeah, this is cool, but like, it's uncomfortable and weird. And my sponsor's like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to stay sober. This is something you can do. And, I chose not to do that. And, it was inevitably I ended up picking up and, it was just a huge learning lesson for me, man. Like today I'm willing to do whatever it takes to stay sober, you know, and I'm so grateful for my sponsor showing me that and teaching me a lesson and really having my back. And, so this is where my story is going to begin. You know, my last run was not my longest. It was not my hardest. I went into treatment this time with money in my pocket and, my head held high and I went in sober, believe it or not. Did not go on one last bender. And this is another part of my message that, is profound. So, you know, during the cycle, I just remember I was sitting on the end of this girl's bed in a similar position that I always was, you know, thinking I'm the man and whatever, all messed up and partying. And, I just remember the sun coming up, she's passed out. And I just remember this sense of, I'm an effing loser. You know, the alcohol was it no longer worked. It could no longer mask the reality of my life. And I literally said it out loud. I was like, I am a loser. And she woke up. She's like, what's going on? I was like, I'm a fucking loser, dude. I've got nothing going on. I haven't done anything. I'm a loser, you know? And she's like, oh, that's weird. Okay. I could not drink enough to lose that feeling, you know? Yeah, man. And that's the alcohol, it stops working. It stopped working for me. And thank God it did, you know? And then after that, I remember I'm sitting there, I'm about to go to treatment. I'm sober, but I'm like, yeah, maybe I'll get one last one in me. And I remember I called up my buddy, yo man, what's up? You want to get one last one in? And he's like, yeah, bro, meet me at the McDonald's. I'm going to make you wait like 2 hours and then, you know, bail on you and take your money and then come back. And, you know, and I'm like, all right, yeah, yeah. And then I was, dude, and I just remember at that moment, I was just like, you know what, dude? No, no. And he's like, yeah, all right, you'll call me back, you know? And I just remember giving up. I just, at that moment, I surrendered, dude. I was like, no, I'm not doing this. So yeah, I went into rehab sober with money in my pocket. I didn't get that last one. That guy, he was one of my best friends. He died 8 months into my sobriety, you know? He's not here anymore, you know? And I had to go to that funeral sober, an open casket. And, that's the reality, you know? So yeah, man, I went to rehab sober, head held high, just ready to do it, dude. Like, I'm tired of talking. I'm tired. I'm just going there. Let's do this. Cause my sponsor told me to go to treatment. I didn't want to go to treatment, but you know, I did. So, my first phone call home was to my sponsor and he told me that my other best friend had died, the guy I was living with. He decided to pick up, right when I was going into treatment and he died. The first thing he said, Kyle's dead. I'm like, and I started crying like a little baby, you know, and that wasn't the first person I had lost and it won't be the last one, but that broke me, you know, cause, it's just like the guilt, man. Like I could have been there for him. I didn't know he was struggling. And he died. You know, we had cats together. I still have his cat to this day. That's all I can do, you know, and that's the realization of this thing. I heard somebody say in treatment one time, a speaker, he said, you have two choices if you're sitting here. You can either be the message or the messenger. So the message is, if you don't get this, you're going to die, right? Or you can be the messenger, which is me. You know, that there's another way to live, you know, and you can overcome this thing. You can be of service, you know, it's, which one do you want to be, you know? And that might sound harsh to you, but, I believe that to be true, you know? So unfortunately my buddy's the message, you know, that, you know, if you don't get this thing, that's how you wind up, dude. And like his family, the grieving families, all this stuff, it just doesn't make sense to me. So yeah, man, that broke me in treatment. But you know, at that moment, I realized like my sponsor had my back. You know, we handled things the way we did. But I'm not going to get into all that stuff. I really want to get into the more of the solution. But at that point, I really learned that I could trust my sponsor, and I need that because I don't trust anybody. I barely trust myself. You know, I didn't grow up in a very trusting environment. You know, this is a messed up world. You know, and I realized that at a young age. But through that process, I really learned that I could trust my sponsor with anything. I'm really grateful for that because he had my back, dude. I'm trying to get into too many details, but, yeah, so I got out of treatment, man. And, he said, come home and we'll keep you sober. And so I came home and he told me if I did the work, no matter what arose, that I would be able to overcome it and I would be able to stay sober. And, so yeah, I became willing to do whatever he said. And, yeah, man, which was like, a lot of little things, you know, most importantly, you know, don't pick up, go to meetings, you know, and do the step work. But it was like a lot of little things that I liked, which was like, talk to new, if somebody's a newcomer, go get their number, you know, let them talk, you know, try to take the focus off of myself, like all these little things. And, yeah, so I went to meetings every single day. I went to the gym every single day. And I did something for my recovery every single day. And I started working the steps, man. What an amazing experience when you surrender. You know, I trust God, clean house, help others. You know, I never struggled with the whole God thing. You know, me and God built this connection. It's funny. I grew up with zero understanding of God at all. Right. But I knew that there was something there because when I was in my deepest, darkest holes with no understanding of God, I would say, God, help me. Where does that come from? You know, so there has to be something out there. You know what I mean? And like, life is pretty bleak, you know, so like, it's not hard for me to imagine that there's something else out there, you know, so, I never struggled with that, and I'm really grateful for that. But yeah, man, getting into the fourth step was, just a really humbling journey. I never realized how resentful I was, and, resentments keep us sick. Because resentments is the number one offender. So to get all that stuff down on paper, just to realize how much hate and resentment I was holding towards other people, it really blew my mind. My fourth step is very long. I learned a lot about myself. I learned that I'm not a victim. You know, I played a huge part in a lot of those things. And even if I didn't, like, I was an innocent kid, the fact I was holding on to them was still a problem, you know? So really grateful for that experience. And that was where my spiritual awakening came in. When I did that work, because I was always a person, I want to do half the work and get twice the reward, you know? And, you know, I might not rob you blind, but I definitely am not going to put up what you put up. You know what I mean? Like, that was how it was, you know? And I'm not that person today, but, you know, manipulative, you know? But I couldn't manipulate a 4-step, you know? So actually putting that work in, 100%, you know, half measures availed is nothing. I want the whole cookie. I don't want half the cookie. I don't want to wind up back in that spot. So, yeah, man, sharing that with my sponsor was huge. Cause I'm not going to lie, there's still a little bit of doubt. I know that it was working for you guys, but, for me, I was like, I don't know, but I'm going to do it, you know? So, I remember sitting down and sharing my 5th step with my sponsor, man. And, I shared my stuff with him, and he's like, well, what's that one thing? And I'm like, all right, dude, well, I trust you, you know? And, when we were done, he was like, how do you feel? And I was like, dude, I still remember that moment sitting there looking at his face. And I was like, dude, I feel great. Like, I literally felt like a weight had been lifted off my shoulders. And, I knew at that time that this thing worked and, there was something to it. And then I was all in. I was like, all right, let's keep doing it, dude. And, yeah, just along this journey, I've learned so much about myself, my defects, my assets. And, you know, it's just really amazing to get to know myself on that level and to not beat myself down, but just, you know, really take a good inventory. Like it says in the book, like no business can be successful if they don't take a regular inventory, you know? So it was really cool, honestly. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, as far as like the major defects I have going on in my life, like the worst ones, I can't say that I really struggle with those. A lot of the little ones, because I heard Tom talk about this, and my experience when Tom had shared about it, my experience was that the big crippling ones for me had been gone. But like he said, you know, they're still there, you know, and it's up to me to remain aware and vigilant and to make sure that these things don't cause problems in my life. And you know, after he said that, it made a lot of sense. And you know, a lot of the little things I go to battle with every day, and it's a really humbling journey. And but yeah, the big things aren't there, and that's through the work. And my sponsor told me, under no circumstances that we don't hurt other people, you know. And that's a really good ground rule to lay, because like when I go to do something, I'm like, crap, I can't. I'm doing really good at not swearing, by the way. I honestly didn't think I was gonna be able to do it. But I'm going to do whatever it takes for AA. we don't hurt other people under any of circumstances. Like I would be like, but they did this to me, or you know. So it's like a really good rule to have, and it prevents me from like having an excuse. Like, well, but they did this, or they, you know. You know, asking God to remove them, again, not hard for me. You know, prayer has become a regular part of my life, and I really enjoy it, honestly. And this is the weirdest thing about, like, prayer. Like, so I have 2 cats, the love of my life. I raised them since they were 2 weeks old. I know, I never thought I'd be a cat guy, but it was me and my buddy, the one that passed away. We're sitting in our little apartment in Pottstown, and we're like, ooh, what can we get away with? And on the lease, it didn't say anything about not having cats. So we get these 2-week-old cats and raise them, bottle feed them and everything, you know. And yeah, I had to help them poop and pee. And I cleaned them with my tongue and all that. And, so, like, dude, like, we're really close, right? Yeah, we're really close. Now, it's so weird, like, you know how cats are, right? Dude, when I pray, when I get down on my hands and knees and I begin to pray, my cats come to me, you know? And I believe that God works through all things, you know, like plants, animals, whatever. And I just feel really at home when I'm praying, you know? And I've developed a really, really good process with that. And it helps keep me grounded and really helps keep, like, the focus off of me, because I don't have any power, you know? Like, everything I have is all glory to God, you know, like, and I really mean that, because if it were up to me, I would still be doing the bare minimum, expecting the most, and being upset about it. So, yeah, you know, and I feel like I'm the best version of myself today. I make a lot of mistakes, and I have no problem telling you guys about it, by the way. You know, I'll go to my friends every day, be like, I did this one thing wrong, why am I so bad, you know, and, I'm really grateful, and I am the best version of myself today, and I'm, gonna keep working at it because this is a never ending thing. I will never arrive, and I'm cool with that. I'm in it. It's one day at a time, but I'm in it for the long haul. You know what I mean? I'd rather be miserable in sobriety than happy out there drunk. That any day. Like, I don't care how miserable I get, I will never look in that rearview mirror because I gave way too much of my time to alcohol and partying. You know what I mean? Like, it's just. It's taken everything from me, my dignity, my respect, my self-worth, you know? So like, I'd rather just, if I don't have those things in sobriety, that's cool. You know what I mean? Like, cause I have really low lows. I'm gonna keep doing this thing. And, you know, I heard a lot of people out there. So the amends list was lengthy and, I've been making amends now for 2 years, a little bit less than 2 years. And, what a great experience. It almost like brings tears to my eyes every time I start to do it to somebody, like, you know, start to make my amends sincerely. And, I'm just really grateful to be able to do the right thing, individually. Like at one time I thought it was a really wise idea to try and make amends to my whole family at one time. Just, you know, like efficiency, you know? And I was told my sponsor, I was like, yeah, I can do this at like a family gathering, right? Like that'd be really efficient. He's like, no, bro. not even close, you know. So doing them all individually at the right time when I'm presented with that, you know, was knocking them off in the way that I thought was best. And it's just been a great experience. I feel a weight lifted off my shoulders every time, and I just feel like I'm doing the right thing. I've been really emphasizing the 10th step recently, it's so humbling because I have a lot of work to do on a daily basis, and I always talk about the alcoholic whack-a-mole. Like, okay, I knock down the alcohol one, and then like 10 other problems pop up. Like, I got like eating, gambling, like all these different things, and I'm like, oh, what do I do with these? You know, so to take a personal inventory, like I have to continue to do that. Because if I hurt somebody, if I do something, I don't want to have to do another 4-step, you know. And I want to make sure that like I'm keeping track of my character defects. Like, did any new ones pop up? Like, are any of those defects poking through? You know, I've really been emphasizing that, and I've been getting a lot out of it recently. The spirituality thing is not a struggle for me. I've been emphasizing the 10 step, like really doing the work. I'm actually thinking about like journaling. I never thought I would do that. But, cause like I'm doing some like paperwork on the 10 step, like every day trying to get that flowing. And, but I've been thinking about it a lot, and I've really been trying to, I have this whole printout and, correcting things wrong when I do them, like as per this sheet. And it's just been a really cool experience over the past couple of months. I'm really trying to emphasize that and live in that. And then, going on to the 11th and really try to focus on that for a couple months to really fine tune these things. Cause this is the maintenance stage. You know, I've done the work. AA works, you know, like I have lost the obsession to drink. And, cause like I'll get caught up in life stuff now and be like, oh, like I can't stop drinking caffeine, or like I spend a lot of money and I'm like, dude, like that's not what AA is for. You know what I mean? Like AA works. I do not have the obsession to drink, you know, miracle. That is a miracle. I haven't had a drink in almost 2.5 years. That is a miracle. So, I guess I'm wrapping up like this 10 minutes. So that's like the stuff that matters to me. Like the stuff that matters is, when I got sober, I wanted some peace and contentment. That's all I want. And anything that comes in the way of that needs to go or be reevaluated, right? So, and right now, I'm pretty much going to list like what you guys have blessed me with is peace, contentment. I can lay my head down at night and feel good about the person I am, because no matter what I did, like I'm willing to try to do better the next day or right my wrong. I've got peace, contentment. I've got like this different outlook on life. Like the promises, they come true. Like my outlook on life before was, how much stuff can I acquire? How much money can I have? Like, what girls can I have? Like, how much fun can I have at other people's expense? Like, that was, and I thought that getting married was stupid. You know, if you got married, you were dumb. Like, that's what I thought. If you had kids, even dumber. Like, dude, why would you, you know what I mean? Like, you're stupid, dude. Why would you want to get, and I, Chelsea, I'm getting to something good, I swear. this is the way I thought. And, yo, and honestly, now that it was pathetic. I was so self-absorbed, right? And it got me nowhere. Yeah, just selfish. But now, like, now my outlook has changed. I can see the benefit of having kids, you know, like being selfless and raising something. Like, that's the point of life, you know, like whether you want to have kids or not. But I want to have kids now. I would like to get married. I would like to have a house, you know, some stability, you know. I would never have imagined me wanting any of those things. Maybe a house, you know, that way I can keep my cars and my stuff there. But, like, you know, I can take the girls back there. But, you know, yeah. I want, like, this, like, I just see, like, this wholesomeness appearing. Like, dude, like, I want some kids, you know? I want to, like, have, a really wholesome, meaningful life and grow with people, not this fly-by-night, shallow, vain existence that I was living before. So, yeah, I've just got, you know, this different outlook on life. I handle situations differently now. Where before I would have flown off the handle and going to the extreme, different words come out of my mouth and different actions and you know, in those very, you know, quick reacting situations. I could give a million examples, but I'm not going to, because most of you know what I'm talking about. And it's a miracle, because that's not me. That's you guys. That's program. That's my higher power. That's because I want peace. Like, I don't need to show you how much of a bigger, badder guy I am or any of that stuff. Nah, dude, I just want to be able to go on my way and live my life. And, yeah, I've just got, like, these deeper things that I never knew existed. Like, yeah, I would like to have a career, you know? I never had the opportunity to go to college or never thought about it. And that was my own fault. That was my alcoholic way, was to get what I need to get to the next weekend, It was never looking anywhere down, you know? Now I'm, like, thinking about a career, you know? You know, I'm a good friend. I'm a good brother. I'm a good son. You know, these deeper things have developed through this process and thanks to you guys, which I never really cared about, to be completely honest. But, you know, when I was looking at myself in the mirror and I didn't like the person I was, you know, these are the reasons why. So now I like that person, and I have developed these things with your guys' help. That wasn't me. It wasn't like, I'll develop a desire to have kids. And I'm like, no, that wasn't. It was like one day I woke up and I was like, dude, like, you're driving to work in the morning and you're not regretting your life. You're like, well, this is kind of nice. The sun's rising. I'm like, yeah, dude, I got some kids, you know. So that's how it happens pretty much. So yeah, just like this real different change in here, you know. And that's what's most important to me, you know, because money's cool, but it really doesn't matter that much. You know, being the coolest guy or, like, looks, like, dude, like, I'm not going to get any better looking, you know what I mean? I probably should work on this in here, you know? This doesn't really matter. So, yeah, just, like, all these deeper things. And then, you know, of course, some other things, you know, which, you know, like, I have a driver's license. Like, I don't owe any fines. I'm not on parole. Like, I pay my rent. I'm not committing crimes. You know, I have a job that's like a career now. I have some possessions. You know, much more, you know, material things. But, you know, it's cool too to look at that, you know, and I owe it all to you guys. And, I really enjoy my life now. I live a life of service. When somebody calls me, I say yes, and I just do it, you know? And again, I'm not going to sit here and give examples. And as frustrating as it can get, or, you know, my selfishness is like, I don't want to do that, because, you know, people did it for me. You guys helped. You guys helped me. You welcomed me every single time I stumbled back in and was like, oh, I hit my head again. That hurt. What do I do now? You know, don't do the same thing you did last time, you know? And yeah, like, last 5 minutes, I'll just talk about, like, so, you know, I talk about being a good brother. Like, I want to be a good role model, you know? I wasn't the best brother that I could be. And, You know, like when I talked about looking around and seeing people's lives messed up, I saw my family's life messed up. Like my brothers are following in my footsteps. And it hurt me, to be completely honest. And so yeah, man, my younger brother, like I knew that if I did the right thing, then he would probably want to do that too, you know? And dude, he's gonna celebrate 6 months soon. And yeah, he lives in Poznan, he's in a recovery house, he's doing well. It's crazy. He came in, he looked like a 90-year-old scraggly mole rat, you know? And now his hair's going back to the right color. He's developing like this spirit in him. Like he wants to do good. He's taking care of his kids. Like he's going to work every day. And dude, like that's the stuff that matters, you know? Like, oh man. And I had zero expectations. I'm like, all right, he's going to come here and he's probably going to fail, you know? And I'm okay with that, you know? But one day of me not picking up, one day of him not picking up is a miracle, you know? And, dude, every one of those miracles has turned into like, you know, he's got a, good foundation under him. I'm just so grateful for that. Cause I want to be a good brother. I want to be around people that challenge me and that I can grow with. And that's what I have. Like the people I have around me are, they're killing it. You know, they're giving back. They're in service. You know, birds of a feather flock together. You know, I just can't thank you guys enough. Really, what it comes down to, because I didn't have anything when I came in here. I didn't have a hope. I didn't have a career. I really didn't have much to offer. Like, you know, deep down. But you guys have taught me a lot. I know the Serenity Prayer. I know the Lord's Prayer. I go to church. I've just got like a strong sense of faith. I have faith that no matter what happens, that I'm gonna be okay. As long as I'm still stuck in air, you know, it's gonna be all right. You know what I mean? Losing jobs don't matter. Like shit, stuff's gonna happen. Just like my sponsor said, if I keep doing this thing, I'll be able to overcome whatever obstacles pop up. You know, and I make a lot of mistakes. You know, I've had two relationships, both a year, and they both ended up in the woman picking up, and I say it's over. You know, and I don't know if you guys, it's hard, dude. It's hard dealing with that stuff. And but yeah, man, you guys have my back. My sponsor has my back. I continue to pray for those people, and I'm just gonna keep doing whatever I have to do on a daily basis, man. Like, no matter what it takes, I take every single one of the things you guys say and I put it in here, you know? Like, I was able to quote things that I heard from Tom, like, a couple months ago, you know what I mean? Cause it really meant a lot to me. I continue to pay attention, yeah, I thank my sponsor for not giving up on me. Yeah, I think I'm still in a recovery house. I have 2.5 years, I'm still in a recovery house, and I'm okay with it. You know, so people are like, when are you going to move out of there? I'm sorry, you want me to go pick up again? You know, I mean, like, it doesn't matter how long I'm going to be here. Like I was always in a hurry. I got to get the car, I got to get the girl, I got to get the career, I don't have to do nothing. You know, I got to stay sober. I got to continue to help other people. You know, everything else will fall into place. And it has. I remember, it's funny, they talk about financial insecurity, believe us. I remember at one time I had like 1 cent in my account and I wasn't insecure about it. Financial insecurity did leave me, you know, and the promises come true. I'm just going to keep doing this thing one day at a time and continue to give back wherever I can. I'll give a big shout out to my sponsees. Like, they've done for me what I cannot do for myself. Like, dude, after a year, I was like, oh yeah, like everything's going to get easier. Wah! Did not happen. You know, it got harder, you know, and my sponsees have helped carry me through, like allowing me to do that work with them and be reminded, on a daily basis. The other rock stars, dude, some of my sponsees are better guys than me, dude. And I'm just so grateful. The one thing that I have to offer to them is these steps. The one thing, you know, and I'm just so grateful for that. You know, I think I've talked enough. So thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.